And this is VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Iheyes Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As if the COVID-19 pandemic wasn't sufficient, I dare to say that we would face multiple political storms in the course of the second half of this year.
That's the director of the National Institute think tank on how COVID-19 crisis is sparking political instability in some African countries. Details coming up. Also, officials in Africa have expressed concern over developments in the U.S. following the death of George Floyd, the black American man killed in police custody in the city of Minneapolis last week. All these ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The COVID-19 crisis is already sparking political instability in some parts of Africa, with opposition parties and civil society groups complaining of abuse and attacks by the powers that be. Political observers are warning that populists have long taken advantage of national emergencies to instill fear in voters and to foster the rise of phenomena such as xenophobia and authoritarianism. Darren Taylor reports.
Dr. Chris Fumunyo, a director at the National Democratic Institute think tank, says the coronavirus crisis has created space for plenty of political surprises in Africa in the near future.
As if the COVID-19 pandemic wasn't sufficient, I dare to say that we would face multiple political storms in the course of the second half of this year.
Human Rights Watch's Africa director, Mousi Segun, says the storms have already started. She says states of emergency have provided some governments with a perfect excuse to crack down on perceived enemies.
In Guinea-Conakry, we've seen it used against political opposition. Many are being arrested in their homes under the cover. So we've seen them use it against journalists in Somalia, in Rwanda, and here in Nigeria. We've seen them use it against LGBT people in Uganda. And in South Africa, we've seen them, use it against migrants.
For the rest of 2020 and spilling into 2021, says Fumunyo, Africa's going to be torn by two opposing currents. The first being what he calls authoritarian opportunism.
The cases where leaders would want to use the cover of the pandemic and COVID-19 to shrink political space even further and to till the playing field for elections in a way that would favor either themselves or their preferred candidates and political parties.
He says lockdowns have weakened opposition forces, including minority political parties and civil society groups across the continent.
The strongest arm of government, as we see right now, is the executive branch of government in most countries. And so there's an imbalance that existed in the past, but that has now been aggravated by the crisis.
For Munoz's second current that he sees flowing from the COVID-19 situation is more optimistic. He calls it democratic resilience.
Despite these challenges, political leaders, elected officials, civil society, the media, and all of the progressive forces that we continue to see across Africa are going to work collectively to make sure that the emerging democracies that we see on the continent come out of this crisis stronger.
But he adds, for this to happen, those in power are going to have to resist the temptation to stifle critical voices. Ideally, says the analyst, the rulers will broaden the scope of stakeholders they consult when important decisions are made, rather than relying solely on patronage networks. With elections penned in for several African nations this year, says Fumunyo, it's vital that the means are created for citizens to engage with all political parties.
Unless voters are brought into the process, even during these trying times, the electoral process could become a very hollow process and whoever gets declared as the winner may not have the legitimacy to be able to govern.
His hope is that ruling parties seize the opportunity to become more transparent in their governance, rather than using coronavirus as an excuse to become even more secretive. But, says Fumunyo, it's a long shot.
I've also been around the block a couple of years, or many years too long, to be able to know that all autocratic habits die hard, and that some of the countries are very likely to stumble.
Fumunyo says should the pandemic peak in Africa in the coming months, it would be very irresponsible of governments to press ahead with polls. He maintains that to expect people to risk infection by exercising their democratic rights would be cruel. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The United States military says it's looking to send one of its security force assistance brigades to Tunisia for training as part of its assistance program for the North African country amid concern over Russian activity in neighboring Libya. The U.S. Africa Command said, as Russia continues to fan the flames of the Libyan conflict, regional security in North Africa is a heightened concern. Despite denials by the Libyan National Army and a Russian Member of Parliament, the U.S. military says Russian military personnel have delivered several MiG-29 and Su-24 fighter jets to the LNA's Jufra Air Base. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Chenawi spoke to Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute and the president of Libya Analysis, about these developments.
What I make of the move is it's symbolically important, and it's showing the way in which the U.S. military, all of the different component parts and combatant commands, AFRICOM in particular, but also the Pentagon and OSD policy, are signaling that their professional people wish to deter Russia. That's what they've been doing. That's what they're trained to do. The fundamental professionals in the Defense Department deter Russia. They're doing it now, and they're doing it vociferously to send the signal and not cave in to the fact that the president and the appointees have been sending other signals. They have been doing the bidding of the UAE in blocking the appointment of the UN special envoy, the former Algerian foreign minister Lamamra, or Trump calling President Erdogan to call for a ceasefire, just as Haftar was on the back foot militarily, or Pompeo calling Sarraj with a similar demand. So these signals are robust and need to make clear in listeners' minds the bipolarity of American policy between appointees on the one hand and the Trump team who do what the UAE want, and then the professionals at the State and Defense Departments who have a continuity of policy trying to deter Russia.
Russian military personnel have delivered several MiG-29 and Sukhoi-24 fighter jets to the Libyan National Army's Jufra Air Base. The United States military confirmed that despite denials by the LNA and a Russian member of the parliament. How serious is such a development?
Russia has been involved in Libya for a long time. Since 2014, it's been supplying training and mercenaries to the LNA. The MiGs that were deployed have probably been in and out of Libya before. The only difference is that they've been called out now by AFRICOM. This is not a Russian escalation. It may be a de-escalation. It's just that we've seen them have to withdraw Russian mercenaries from Beni Waleed to Jufra. And what they've done with this deployment of these aircraft is draw a line in the sand. They've lost territory, and they lost the ability to use the Watiya airbase. So they've said, this is our line in the sand. It's in Jufra. Anything to the east of Jufra, we will retaliate. We will act. And it seems that the Turks agree on this. So anything to the west of Jufra is the area that the Turks are allowed to operate in. And anything to the east of it is the area that the Russians, the Emiratis, the Egyptians, and Haftar are allowed to act in.
Turkey has been providing the Government of National Accord allied forces with military aid after striking a deal with the Tripoli government that grants Turkey access to natural gas reserves in disputed waters in the eastern Mediterranean. Would the Turkish involvement lead to convincing LNA backers that there is no military solution in Libya?
You're right that the Turkish have changed the momentum and that that happened after they signed the contested maritime memorandum of understanding. Yes, the Turkish have established facts on the ground. They have changed the balance of air power. They've introduced new drones and new jamming technology of the Russian Pantsir anti-aircraft missiles. Does that convince the other side that there's no military solution? I think it convinces them that they're on the back foot and that Haftar has miscalculated. It may convince them that a kind of de facto partition is the solution. It may convince them that the road to a solution goes through Istanbul, and that if they could work with Istanbul, they can neutralize them. Clearly, because the Turkish successes have happened, we're going to see mediation at the top tables being between Istanbul and the Russians, the Emiratis, and Haftar. Whether that will lead to a peaceful solution rather than a new round of military confrontation, I can't say.
That was Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute and the president of Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Officials in Africa have expressed concern over developments in the U.S. following the death of George Floyd, the Black American man killed in police custody in the city of Minneapolis last week. The head of the African Union described Floyd's death as an act of murder, while South Africa's ruling party is calling for calm in the U.S. Statements from the African continent could portend a shift in global relations and hopefully, analysts say, make a bigger point whether you live in Minneapolis or Monrovia. George Floyd's death affects us all. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Minneapolis, Washington, Houston, New York, Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta. In recent days, rage in these and other cities over police brutality against Black Americans has spread across the United States. But the outrage has also spread to Africa. In Addis Ababa, African Union Commission Chairman Moussa Faki Mahamat took the U.S. government to task over the death of Floyd. Going a step further, the former Chadian Prime Minister used a powerful word that many protesters are using to describe Floyd's death: murder. Meanwhile, U.S. embassies in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and the Democratic Republic of Congo issued rare statements of concern over Floyd's May 25th death and called for accountability after the arrest of a police officer on third-degree murder and manslaughter charges. Why? Because, in the words of Karine Kanezan-Atulia, Human Rights Watch's Africa Advocacy Director, George Floyd is all of us.
This is the eternal struggle of any member of a minority community. It's going to touch anyone who has had previous experiences of abuse and oppression, be it because of one's race or religious background or sexual identity, you name it. And at the same time, it touches me in a way that it is bringing up issues that could be very, very easily forgotten as well. And I guess the struggle, and I think the challenge for every institution like the African Union, for leaders around the world, for organizations like ours, is to find the tools to move ahead and to address some of the deeply seated social economic issues that are the trigger factors for this.
For decades, African leaders have publicly chafed at what they view as paternalistic treatment from Western nations. This tragic incident, says Andrews Atta Asamoah, an Addis Ababa-based researcher for the Institute for Security Studies, could compel the African Union to take the lead. He spoke to VOA by phone from Pretoria.
This is a broader issue, and it fits into a broader systemic crisis which the AU can engage the US on in terms of what needs to be done. Between the AU and also the diaspora community, I think this is an opportunity for the AU now to begin to empathize exactly what the African American community go through on a day-to-day basis.
And Kanezan-Atulia says, This strong statement from African leadership could also spur citizens across Africa to demand that the AU stand up for them, too. She spoke to VOA on a WhatsApp call from her base in Washington.
It's important because I think beyond the United States, it reminds us of what Africans in all their diversity have the legitimacy and the right to ask, not only their governments, but also the African Union. I was looking at some of the comments and responses to the chairperson's tweet when the statement was out. And it was very interesting how people from Cameroon, people from different countries were like, okay, violence also exists in our own countries, and people die in the hands of security forces. So that's another expectation. It's a layer of expectation that's now being put on the African Union because of that statement.
This week, as fires burned across the U.S., South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party also weighed in the mounting crisis, saying the deaths of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor show that American society places a perilously low value on black lives. But rights groups are quick to chime in. No society is perfect. Human Rights Watch has documented how coronavirus lockdowns across much of the continent have spurred security forces to cross lines. In Lagos and Nairobi, security officers shot and killed teenagers while attempting to enforce the restrictions. And in April, soldiers entered the Johannesburg home of Collins Khosa, a father of three, and accused him of violating lockdown regulations. His family says they dragged him outside, slammed him against a cement wall, kicked, slapped, and punched him. He died hours later, and military authorities exonerated the soldiers implicated in his death. His family is challenging that in court. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The International Rescue Committee, IRC, says the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan is adding to the COVID-19 crisis and other hazards. President Salva Kiir has warned the country, where conflict has significantly weakened the health system, that it may not be able to withstand the overwhelming emergencies witnessed around the world. The IRC statement says more than 9 million people in South Sudan are in need of assistance. It says COVID-19 and the related economic crisis, the political stalemate within the recently formed government, an escalation of violence between communities, an oncoming plague of desert locusts, and a drastic drop in oil revenue were exacerbating a legacy of disease, hunger, and displacement left from 6 years of civil war. IRC says the populace needs a lot of support. The mystery surrounding a mass die-off of elephants in Botswana is deepening after initial test results ruled out poisoning and anthrax. Wildlife officials had earlier ruled out poaching, as no ivory had been taken, but officers have discovered more carcasses as the death toll surpasses 100. Mokandisi Dube reports from Habrone.
Wildlife officer Tikamatswan Nsebe said initial results have ruled out anthrax and poisoning as the cause of death. Samples would now be sent to neighboring South Africa for further tests. He said more animals could die as some look sickly.
We are still experiencing elephants dying in the Okavango Panhandle. We also see elephants that show that they are sick and are in the verge of dying. As of Friday, we had a total count of 110 elephant carcasses.
Villagers have been warned against consuming meat from the dead animals. Nsebe said the public has thus far heeded the call. The Department of Wildlife has begun removing tusks from the carcasses.
We have started removing the tusks in those dead elephants, and we have started burning the carcasses. We have started with those that are close to the villages and those that are lying in the water. The idea is to burn as many carcasses as possible. However, we have a challenge since some of the carcasses are in areas that are difficult to reach with a vehicle.
The department is also investigating the cause of the elephant deaths. The search is complicated by the COVID-19 crisis, which may delay results from the samples. The COVID-19 disease is caused by the coronavirus. Botswana has the world's largest elephant population at more than 130,000. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
The World Health Organization has warned that malaria deaths in sub-Saharan Africa could double this year to 769,000 due to disruptions caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Nigeria has the highest cases of malaria in the world, but with the global focus on controlling the spread of COVID-19, many malaria patients are not getting to hospitals, and intervention could fall through the cracks. Nigerian technology startup Well Health is trying to bridge the gap with rapid malaria testing. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian Blessing Achu has had a fever for days and thinks she has malaria. Before, she would go to the hospital and be tested. But because of the coronavirus pandemic, she's trying a quick alternative, a rapid malaria test at this nearby community pharmacy. Achu says this method also saves money.
I'm used to doing this lab test where you take your blood and tell you to come back either the next day or come back 4 hours later, but Well Health, the test is very fast. You get it very, very fast.
This pharmacy is one of thousands across Nigeria signed up on the Wella Health mobile platform to bring quick testing to thousands. Pharmacist Olukunga Olaiton signed up some months ago.
I can say 60% of the complaints I have in a day comprise of malaria symptoms and, fever in general, which at the end of the day we'll find out to be as a result of malaria infection, because they come up with the common symptoms that we know, fever, body aches. Some of them might have catarrh, cough, and headache in addition. So what we do definitely is to recommend the test for them.
Nigeria has 25% of the world's malaria cases. Malaria also accounts for the most inpatient visits at Nigerian hospitals. But since the coronavirus pandemic, health authorities expressed concern over a significant drop in the number of non-COVID-19 consultations at clinics. Founder of the Wella Health Technology, Neto Ikpeme.
Our rapid malaria testing program is really making a difference because it's taking away all that attention from the hospitals which you need to treat the sicker people and manage the coronavirus patient.
The World Health Organization is warning disruptions in the medical system due to the coronavirus could inhibit treating malaria patients and lead to 769,000 deaths by the end of the year. But agencies and NGOs focused on malaria are responding to this threat by distributing insecticide-treated nets in parts of Nigeria at high risk for the disease. Sonachi Ezeiru is the Malaria Project Head of the Catholic Relief Services, CRS.
Before the pandemic, we saw the decrease over 10 years of the prevalence of malaria from 42% to 23% in Nigeria. That's a great achievement. And these gains must be consolidated. We must not lose the gains because of COVID-19.
At a time in Nigeria when movement restrictions and social distancing are priority, the Wella Health innovation is making sure that many like Blessing get quick access to malaria care and testing with a reduced risk of exposure to COVID-19. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbi Yabaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voa.com.